He had things to do and couldn't afford to turn her antagonistic. She pulled her dress up her legs and put his hand against her thigh.
"Like this better?"
she asked in a breathy voice. Richard froze at the firm, sensual feel of her flesh. He remembered what Sister Verna had said, that he would soon find another pair of pretty legs. These were certainly that, and Pasha was leaving precious little to the imagination. He pulled his hand away.
"Pasha, you don't understand. I think you're a beautiful young woman."
Her eyes fixed on his face as she ran her fingers down his beard.
"I think you're the most handsome man I've ever seen."
"No, you don't.
I love your beard. Don't ever cut it off. I think a wizard should have a beard."
Richard remembered the time Zed had used additive magic to grow a beard and teach him a lesson, and then had shaved it off, explaining he couldn't make it vanish with magic because that would take subtractive magic, and wizards didn't have subtractive magic. Subtractive magic was of the underworld. He caught her wrist and pulled her hand away from his face. To Richard, his beard was a symbol of his captivity. It meant he was a prisoner. Prisoners don't shave. That was what he had told Sister Verna. But he didn't think now was the time to explain that to Pasha. She kissed his neck. Somehow he was unable to stop her. Her lips were so soft, and he could hear her insistent breath close to his ear. It felt as if the kiss went all the way through him, down to his toes, something like the feeling he had had when she had put her hands to his Radha Han. The tingling numbed his brain. Inside, he groaned. His resistance was being dissolved by her kisses. When he had been held in a collar by Denna, he had had no choice. Not even death could rescue him from whatever Denna wanted, but he still felt shame for what he had done. He was in a collar again, and Pasha was using some sort of magic on him, but he knew that this time he had a choice in the matter. He forced himself to hunch his head and get her lips from him. He gently pushed her back.
"Pasha, please."
She straightened a little.
"What's her name? This girl you love?"
Richard didn't want to tell her Kaylin's name. It was his life. It was private. These people were his captors, not his friends.
"That's not important. That's not the issue."
"What does she have that I don't? Is she prettier than me?"
"You are a girl," Richard thought, "and she is a woman." But he couldn't say that.
"You are a pretty candle," he thought,
"and Kaylin is the sunrise." But he couldn't say that either. If he spurned Pasha, he would have war on his hands. He had to get out of this without making her feel resentful or rejected.
"Pasha, I am honored.
I'm flattered. I really am. But you have only known me a day. We've really just met."
"Richard, the Creator gives us urges and pleasure from acting on them, so we will come to know His beauty through His creation. There is nothing wrong with this. It is a beautiful thing."
He also gave us a mind to decide what is right and what is wrong. Her chin lifted just a little.
"Right and wrong? If she loved you, she would be with you. She wouldn't have let you go. That's what is wrong. She thinks you aren't good enough for her. She must wish to be free of you. If she cared, she would have kept you with her. She's gone. I'm here, and I care. I would fight to keep you. Did she fight?"
Richard's mouth opened, but no words came through the hurt. He felt as if his will to go on had drained right out of him, leaving nothing but a hollow, dead shell. Pasha reached out and touched his cheek.
"You will see that I care, Richard. I care more than she does. You'll see. It's right if a person cares as I do."
Her brow creased in worry.
"Unless you think I'm unattractive. Is that it? You've seen many women and you think that in comparison, I'm ugly?"
Richard cupped a hand to the side of her face.
"Pasha, you are ravishing. It's not that."
He swallowed the dryness, trying to make his words sound sincere.
"Pasha, could you just give me some time? It's simply too soon. Can you understand? Could you really care for a man who would forget his feelings so easily? Could you just give me some time?"
She wrapped her arms around him and laid her head against his chest.
"I knew yesterday, when you held me so tenderly, that it was another sign that the Creator had sent you to me. I knew then that I would never want another. Since I'll be yours forever, I can wait. We have almost nothing but time. We have all the time you could possibly want. You'll see that I'm the one for you. You just tell me when you are ready, and I'll be yours.
Richard sighed as he closed the door behind her. He leaned his back against the door, thinking. He didn't like deceiving Pasha, letting her think that with time he could come to feel differently about her, but he had had to do something. How shallow could Pasha's understanding of people be for her to think that one could win love by invoking lust? He took out the lock of Kaylin's hair, spinning it in his fingers as he watched it. The things Pasha had said about Kaylin not fighting for him made him angry. Pasha could never know the struggles he and Kaylin had been through, the hardships they had had to overcome, the anguish they had suffered together, the battles they had fought together. Pasha probably couldn't conceive of a woman of Kaylin's intelligence, strength, and courage. Kaylin had indeed fought for him. She had more than once selflessly risked her life for him. What could Pasha know of the terrors Kaylin had bravely faced and conquered? Pasha wasn't woman enough to serve Kaylin tea. He stuffed the lock of hair back into his pocket. He forced his thoughts of Kaylin from his mind. He couldn't endure the pain. He had other things to do. Going into the bedroom, he positioned the ash-framed standing mirror and then retrieved his pack from the corner. Richard pulled out the black Mriswith cape. He threw it around his shoulders and stood inspecting his image in the mirror. It looked like a normal cape. He thought it quite handsome, actually. The cut and length was right. The Mriswith had been about his size. The heavy fabric was inky black, almost as black as a nightstone that Addie had given him to help him across the pass, almost as black as the boxes of Orden, almost as black as eternal death. But the pleasing cut of the cape was not what intrigued him. Richard moved back against the light brownish wall. He pulled the hood up, cowling it around his face, and drew the cape closed. As he watched his image in the mirror, he concentrated on the wall he was standing against. In the span of a breath, his image vanished. The cape had become the color of the wall he stood against, to such a degree that only if he stared, focusing on the edges of the cape, could he distinguish himself standing against the wall. If he moved, it was only slightly easier to pick out his shape against the wall. Though his face was exposed, somehow the magic of the cape, or possibly the cape's magic along with his own, served to mask it, too, to enfold it somehow into the concealing color. This explained why the Mriswith appeared to be different colors. Richard moved objects behind himself to discover what effect they had. He stood in front of the wall and partly in front of a chair with his red coat draped over it. The cape produced a blotch of red that did a good job of mimicking the color and shape behind. Though it wasn't as flawless as when he stood before a plain wall, it would still be easy to miss him if he stood still. Movement would distort the complicated images as the cape changed to accommodate new conditions, though it still fooled the eye into missing him. But if he stood still, he virtually vanished in front of anything. The effect, at times, could be dizzying to watch. When he stopped concentrating, the cape would return to black. This, he thought as he looked at himself in the mirror standing in a simple black cape, was going to be useful. Chapter 56. As the weeks passed, Richard was constantly busy. He remembered that Kaylin and Zed had told him that there were no wizards with the gift left in the Midlands. Small wonder, they seemed to all be at the Palace of the Prophet. There were well over 100 boys and young men at the palace. From what Richard could discover, a goodly number of the older ones, at least, were from the Midlands, with some even from Dahara. Killing a Mriswith had earned Richard celebrity status among the younger boys. Two of them, Kip and Hirsch, were the most persistent. They followed him around, begging to hear stories of his adventures. At times, they exhibited the maturity, almost wisdom, of old men. At other times, they, like all boys, seemed interested in nothing more than mischief. The object of this mischief was usually a sister. The boys never seemed to tire of thinking up new tricks to pull on them. Most of the pranks appeared to involve either water, mud, or reptiles. The sisters only occasionally erupted in anger when caught up in the boys' antics, and even then they quickly forgave them. As far as Richard could tell, the boys never earned more than a stern lecture. In the beginning, the young boys thought to number Richard among their targets. Richard had things to do and had no time or patience for it. When the boys learned that Richard was neither shy nor slow with discipline, they quickly moved on to other targets with their buckets of water. The fact that Richard set limits made Kip and Hirsch like him all the more. They seemed starved for older male companionship. Richard rewarded them with adventure stories, or sometimes, when he was going from one place to another and their presence wouldn't impede his progress, he taught them about the woods, tracking, and animals. They coveted staying in Richard's good graces, so when he wanted or needed to be alone and signaled with a finger or a nod, they vanished. Richard let them be around often when he was with Pasha, since he couldn't do more important tasks then anyway. Frustrated because she couldn't seem to find time alone with him, Pasha was somewhat mollified when Richard got her excluded from the boy's list of targets. She appreciated not having her fine dresses drenched or having to worry about discovering a snake in her shawl. Richard occasionally asked Kip and Hirsch to perform little errands just to test them. He had plans for their talents. The other young men in collars wanted to show Richard the city. Two, Perry and Isaac, who lived in Gillamy Hall with him, took him into the city and showed him the tavern where many of the guards drank, and he soon after bought swordsman Kevin Antlemere the ale he had promised him. Richard discovered that most of the young men spent their nights away from the palace, staying in various fine inns around the city. It didn't take Richard long to figure out why. They were provided money, the same as he, and they were practiced at spending it. They bought themselves fancy clothes, dressing like princes, and on their overnight stays they picked the finest accommodations. There was no shortage of women wanting to share those accommodations, astonishingly beautiful women. When Perry and Isaac took him to the city, they were always quickly surrounded by attractive women. Richard had never seen women this brazen. Every evening, the two men would each select a woman, sometimes several, and buy them presents, maybe a dress or a bauble, and then depart for their rooms.